Sir, could you just identify yourself for the record?
Yes, I certainly will.
We've got.
I'm Steve
Hartstein.
I'm professor of education at St. Cloud State University. And I am addressing section 16, the teacher performance assessment.
Thank you.
I had come with prepared testimony. However, the amendment here captures most of what I was interested in. I do have two remaining concerns. Currently, and I'll pass these documents around, I've passed them around to others in the past. These documents delineate some of the fees that students pay during student teaching. And I'm extremely concerned that we will be increasing those fees. Now, with the amendment in this document, that should take care of some of that. I continue to be concerned about the students who will be charged between $275 and $300 for this teacher performance assessment beginning in the spring of 2013, which is the time at which the Board of Teaching is being asked to respond back to the legislature about that. So that is one concern. I'm hoping the legislature will then take action on reducing those fees at that point, but there's this window in between the report and when the fees are supposed to take place that worries us for our students. So there is one concern. The other concern that I would like to have addressed, and maybe Board of Teaching will do this, is to have them continue to work with the vendors to reduce some of the fees for these assessments. They are expensive. They are to a for-profit entity that is making lots of money off of public education. And I would hope as a state we can negotiate to reduce some of those fees. And other than that, I had my prepared testimony. This takes care of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the testifier? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, when student teachers teach, do they have to become members of a union?
Mr. Hornstein.
They do not have to become members. They do have to have liability insurance. And the cheapest way to get teachers' liability insurance is to become a student member of Education Minnesota. They can get liability insurance other ways. But the most typical way it happens is by joining Education Minnesota, because that's the cheapest way to achieve.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
So when you show that professional liability insurance is up to $75, the union fees for the student teacher are less than that?
It's about $25 a year.
Mr. Hornstein.
$75. They need that across multiple years for the various times they're in school. So if they're, you know, if they're in the education program for 3 years, 3 years in a row, they have to pay their annual $25 fee for their liability insurance.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Testifier, so when a student goes into student teaching, do they pay the full Education Minnesota membership fee?
No.
Which is,
Mr. Hornstein.
No, they pay the $25 student fee.
Okay. Thank you.
I believe it's $25. It says based on the document there.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming down. Are there, since we're on the on section 16, are there any other people in the audience who wanted to testify on section 16? Please join us at the table and identify yourself for the record. Senator Carlson, did you have a question?
Madam President, or Chair, I was just wondering if we had to do an oral amendment on that header, or is that, I just didn't know if that would have to be cleaned up or anything.
It's incorporated.
It's already incorporated.
Okay.
Senator Carlson will just incorporate that.
Perfect.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Karen Ballmer. I'm the Executive Director for...
Is this better? Director for the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Just primarily wanted to make myself available for your questions that you may have that pertain to the teacher performance assessment. As Dr. Hornstein mentioned, there's a cost to this assessment. We are interested in the work of reducing and offsetting those costs to candidates. I don't have what you have in front of you, but certainly that's a concern. We do have a committee of folks from MinSCU, University of Minnesota,
and our private
colleges and universities who are actively pursuing and looking at these issues as well. So certainly just want to make myself available for questions. We would support the amended language that you have in front of you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the testifier? Thank you very much. I don't see anyone else in the audience on this section, so we will go to
Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
Chair, why wouldn't we just use both the House language and the suggested language and eliminate the fee for now and have them come back and report later? Anybody think that's a good idea? I think the House language, the original House language, eliminates the fee immediately. And then your compromise language says it's not going to eliminate the fee. It's going to have to do a study and then come back with a report on what they should do. So how about if we incorporate both of those into the bill so that we immediately eliminate the fee and then have the study as well to see if a fee is warranted?
Senator Tomasoni, and maybe Ms. Novak can help me, because this is a House, it's a House provision. We did not have it. But my understanding is there, the fee won't be charged until 2013. And Ms. Novak, maybe you can help me out and clear that up.
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, the House position does eliminate the fee, which, as I understand it, will first be charged early in 2013. But it only eliminates it for Minscu institutions. This is a test that goes much broader than Minscu institutions.
Senator Tomasoni.
However, the language that's suggested in the amendment, doesn't it eliminate the House language?
Yes.
And then it puts a study in. So... so is there's no fee right now? Is that what we're saying? Mm-hmm. There's a proposed fee in that.
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, as I understand it, the test is being given or is being proposed by the Board of Teaching to evaluate teacher preparation programs. The test will be given to students in those teacher preparation programs, and the students will be charged a fee that goes to compensate the test provider for scoring and administering.
But beginning when?
Beginning in 2013.
And I believe Ms. Palmer is here to add to that explanation.
When
Ms. Palmer.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, members, there is no charge currently to teacher candidates. Right now, we are in a field trial. The teacher performance assessment is an assessment built and developed by Stanford University, and so we're working closely with them as they have. We were in a pilot phase all of last academic school year. We're in a field trial this year. We right now have student teachers who are performing on this assessment and are submitting it as part of the field trial. We anticipate that it will be fully launched and operational January of 2013. That will be the first point in time at which there could be a fee for candidates. Now, what we have been talking about, as I mentioned in my prior comments, we have a committee, an elected committee of representatives from Minscu institutions, University of Minnesota institutions, and our private colleges and universities that we meet monthly. We're actively engaged in these. And one of the dialogues we're currently in is what to do about the spring of 2013 as it relates to candidates, whether we would require all candidates to complete and submit in the official scoring system, which is when the fee gets triggered, or whether we might actually have a our working proposal is right now that we would threshold of candidates to make sure that programs are getting the valuable feedback, some baseline data about performance of their candidates and so forth. But bottom line is that the first time that candidates could be assessed the fee would be the spring of 2013.
Yeah. Representative Bannon.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, Senator Tomasoni.
What's the date in spring of 2013?
That's my question.
That's what I thought.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Baltimore, ma'am.
This spring of the semester beginning in January, the candidates don't submit, probably begin submitting until late March, early April, is what we believe would be, that was the submission window that we're working under for the field
trial this year.
Is
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, and at that point of submission, is that when they pay the $300?
Ms. Ballmer.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, how fast can you get a bill passed in case we want to eliminate it when we come back?
Senator Tomasoni, we can do it very quickly.
I read it as speedy.
Representative Bain, okay,
no, that's
all right.
Fine. That's fine. You got
thank me. You very much. And I'm sorry I mispronounced your name. I wrote it down wrong. I'm sorry. Well, then we will move to, is it? Chris Tostad wanted to testify on, I guess, on, yeah, but it is, it's section, or it's Section 4 of the House bill. It'll be in the side by side. It was not included in the Senate bill. Please, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Christopher Tostad. I'm the chairman for the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, which is the representative lobbying arm for the University of Minnesota system. Like was mentioned, this provision that I'd like to talk about is not currently in the Senate bill. It was included in the House bill. So it's about the Office of Higher Education Student Advisory Committee, and I'll just briefly rehash the issue here. This is an advisory committee that exists assembled by student leaders throughout the state that are represented on this committee. Our core institutions, both from Minsky institutions, not-for-profit schools, and the University of Minnesota. Currently, the University of Minnesota has one representative on this committee, the chairman of our Student Senate. We, as the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, a newly formed body, feel that the university is underrepresented on this committee and that we are in line to provide a new perspective. The opposition to moving forward with a provision like this was presented in the sense that this is meant to be a representative committee, that all constituencies in terms of demographic of student and the nature of student experiences are represented effectively on this committee. But the argument that we've brought to this issue is that this committee is ultimately advisory in nature, and the purpose of this committee and anything that comes in the form of a vote is strictly internal, and the true effect of this committee goes into providing an opinion and providing a diverse set of perspectives. And we feel that the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition provides a fundamentally novel perspective to this conversation just due to the way that we function, operate, and the ultimate purpose that we serve for the University of Minnesota students. And just to briefly highlight those distinctions, the Student Senate functions as a policy-forming body on campus. It, along with the MSLC, is a system-wide representative body, both the MSLC and Student Senate represent the system as a whole, but do so in distinct ways. So the Student Senate being that policy-forming body and the MSLC being a representative group that works at the extension of the student associations works strictly at the Capitol. So we feel that while Student Senate has an ear on the ground on campus and has a very keen eye on ways that from that statistical policy very logistical standpoint, how students can be best represented by what the Office of Higher Education is doing in policy formation. The MSLC functions very proximal to the Capitol. We're very in tune with what is going on at the Capitol here and interacting with legislators and being a part of that policy conversation. So these are two different sides of the spectrum that need to be fundamentally represented in this conversation and can provide new perspectives as a whole. And the expansion of the membership of this committee, I think, would be to the betterment of this particular committee's focus and to the betterment of the Office of Higher Education as a whole. And our request would be that this provision is included in the final bill as conferred. And I'll stand for questions.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I forgot your name. I apologize.
Chris Tostad.
Tostad.
Chris.
Tostad. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Tostad, I remember when you brought this idea to the higher ed committee back probably a month and a half, maybe even 2 months ago, I don't remember. Since that time, has there been any student advisory council meetings?
Mr. Tostad.
Madam Chair, Senator, there has been one meeting as far as I know of. We did not attend that meeting because we were not informed of it until very shortly beforehand. I received an email from our Senate chair the evening before when the meeting was at 9 a.m. the next morning. Even still, these meetings are open to the public, and that was, I guess, an alternative that was proposed that we should be involved in that sense. But what we feel is there's a greater significance in recognizing that this truly is a perspective that's purposeful and should be included as a member on the committee by enacting us as an actual member through this legislation, through this route, since that's what's necessary to establish membership. So in that sense, we weren't looking to show up uninvited, I guess, in that sense, since there was still kind of this gray area where we were going through this process. So I guess those are kind of the two factors to take into consideration as to why we didn't show up at that meeting.
Senator Carlson?
So, Mr. Tostead, this meeting, was it a regularly scheduled meeting?
Mr. Tostead?
Madam Chair, Senator, I can't speak to that. We're not, I don't receive information on the regular occurrences of the meetings, but I was informed that there was a meeting that would be happening at that particular time, so I can't answer that question.
Senator Carlson?
Well, I guess my question, Madam Chair, and Mr. Tostead, if this is a regularly scheduled meeting and their meetings are open to the public and there's an interest on the part of this group, you would think that they would have an idea when those meetings are and would want to show up whether they're invited or not. And they didn't. I guess I'm not sure. I'll let it go at that.
Any further questions, discussion on this provision or further testifier? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Is there anyone else in the audience who did want to testify on this section since we're here? Then I will open it up, and if there is anyone that we didn't have on the list that would like to testify on any of the provisions in the proposed DE 1-2 amendment, I guess is what it is, please join us. Just identify yourself for the record. And
good evening, Madam Chair and members. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for your work on the bill. I know that there's been quite a bit of work on the revenue fund provision, quite a bit of work on the textbook provision, and we're grateful for the time that you spent on that. We're also grateful for the continuing operations language. That's important to our students, and we appreciate the support that we've received on that language. And on the final section that was just recently discussed concerning the TPA, we're comfortable with the amendment. Thank you. Or with the delete all amendment, as the language reads. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee for Ms. King?
Madam Chair.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. King, I would ask sort of that comfort level that you have just expressed concerning TPA. In the textbook provisions, there are requirements suggesting that the state colleges and universities would compile the course schedule with a material list. Is Minsky comfortable with that language?
Yeah, sure.
Ms. King.
Yes, we are.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Please join us at the table. Would ever like to go first, just identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Ferd Schlopper. I'm the director of Boynton Health Service at the University of Minnesota. I'm testifying regarding to Section 1 with the student health care. A couple points I would like to share with the committee members is that, most importantly, this policy at the University of Minnesota and across the country is in response to concerns raised by three major constituencies. The first is our community medical providers and hospitals. The second is our local community citizens. And then the third is our student body as a whole. Our community hospitals, medical facilities, and provider groups have expressed their concerns that it would be irresponsible of the university to attract tens of thousands of students to our local community who did not have adequate health insurance coverage to meet the needs of the types of health issues that are that they are trying to address. What they have found over the years is that they are left holding the bag for unpaid medical bills from these students, and then the students leave the community. And the point that they're making to us is if we're bringing these students into the community, we need to make sure they've got that safety net of the coverage for the types of services that they need. Our community citizens are subsidizing that care, those uncompensated bills, to the tune of over $1,000 in each of our insurance premiums that we're paying each year, that the university would bring those students here to the community. And then the third group, our student body as a whole, has stated that they want a type of plan that is providing the most cost-effective program that meets the most relevant healthcare needs that they have. This plan provides services for up to 95% on their student health insurance premium dollar to cover their benefits. It is a self-funded plan, so when they utilize services appropriately and save money, it rolls back to the plan. There is no profit margin for a company. There is no fees. There's no incentive for the university to have students enrolled on the plan. It is a student plan and student benefit. The reason why plans that other students would come forward with that has a lower premium and yet has built in a profit margin and fees for an insurance company, the reason why that costs less is because it covers less. Our data shows that a $5,000 deductible will not cover over 90% of the claims that our students present with. Therefore, for 90% of their health care needs, they have no coverage. They will be paying out of pocket, and it creates that financial barrier to them accessing, and why the providers see that they have these unpaid claims. And so it's not adequately meeting the needs of those services, and others have to end up paying that to cover for those components.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, what is the cost for the health coverage to the students at the University of Minnesota if they decide to go on that plan?
On our Madam Chair and community members.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carl Anderson. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Boynton Health Service. The cost of our plan is $1,800 a year, or about $150 on average per month. Our plan has no deductible and is in the process of meeting all of the ACA requirements for health care reform.
Thank you.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Anderson, do they just pay that in the fall and then they're good for a whole year, or is it by the semester? Could you explain how that works?
Yes, Senator Carlson.
Students pay per semester. They pay through their tuition. They can apply for financial aid. They can roll it into their tuition and fees, and it's something that can be applied towards financial aid. So it's paid by the semester.
Senator Carlson.
So, Mr. Anderson, is it a typical student would probably go to school two semesters, and so is it then approximately $900 per semester?
That'd be correct.
So,
Mr. Anderson?
The fall semester covers a little more than 6 months, and the spring or fall semester covers slightly less than 6 months. Spring semester covers slightly more than 6 months. There's a little unevenness, but we cover 12 months through the plan year from August to August.
Senator Carlson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm just trying to think of how close your semesters may relate to Bemidji State University. They start in September and they end in December. And it seems like it's only about 4 months. So I'm not following the 6 months.
It's August to
Mr.
December.
Anderson.
Senator Carlson, the semester goes from plan year starts in August, goes through January when spring semester starts. Then it starts up again the third week in January and goes through August to cover the 12-month period.
Senator Carlson.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier. If a student is covered by their parents, how do you determine whether or not that meets the criteria of the university or not. What is that criteria?
Mr. Anderson.
Senator, members of the committee, present time we're waiving 95% of students who have coverage as dependents on parents' plans, coverage on Minnesota Care. A lot of the plans that are described in the bill are plans that we currently waive. There are very few waivers that are not accepted. Basic issues we have with the language, the way this is worded, with no restrictions at all on the limits of coverage or limits of benefits. The language is basically requiring us to accept all levels of coverage, including catastrophic coverage. This isn't just about $2,000 and $5,000 deductible plans. This is about students with plans with $25,000 and $50,000 catastrophic coverage only, as well as plans that don't cover mental health benefits or are very restricted benefits as far as prescriptions and other levels of coverage.
Mr. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up to that. So if a family plan does have a high deductible savings account, HSA, and it's $2,500 and $5,000 deductibles, that would be covered?
Yes. Senator, yes.
Senator, or Mr. Mill, or Mr. Anderson, excuse me.
Senator, yes. The answer to that is yes.
Thank you.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then should I ask my constituent, who is a student at the University of Minnesota, to go back and reapply for the waiver that they were not granted?
Mr. Anderson.
Senator, yes, I don't understand why they weren't waived, because basically the way we're applying the waiver criteria, they should have been waived. I would say yes.
I'll be down tomorrow.
Representative Nornis has a question.
You had indicated what the premium was for a student, and I assume that's a single. You have married students as well, I'm sure. How does that, do you cover family coverage then, and what would be the premium for that?
Mr. Anderson.
Senator, yes, family coverage is approximately $500 to $600 more per semester, about $2,300 per year, approximately $2,300 to $2,400 per year for family.
Just a follow-up.
Representative Nornis.
Just a comment. That would seem to me probably where the biggest benefit from this language would come, because families probably are struggling just to get through the courses and pay for that. And there may be some other alternatives that would save them a little bit on premium versus what you're offering. So the first premium for a single didn't sound out of line, but when you get up into a family, that's a different story.
Mr. Anderson.
Senator, yes, I think we're working hard to bring our dependent coverage costs down. We don't cover very many dependents, but that's something that we're definitely working towards.
Mr. Anderson, I have a question about, is there an actual written waiver policy and where you can find all of the requirements that you may have for coverage so that, for example, Senator Carlson's constituent knows what he needs to have in order to get the waiver, given that he was unable to get the waiver?
Yes, Madam
Mr. Anderson.
The information is all on the Boynton website. We have a link to our student health benefit program. All the information about the waiver, the forms to complete the waiver request are all online and can be submitted to our office.
And Mr. Anderson, those students are made aware of this, because it really seems like they're not aware of this. That all and I would also question. This is language from the House side, but I'd also wonder if there were more waivers granted since this bill appeared in the legislature, or if 95% of those waivers had always been, because it doesn't seem like it, Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, I think this came up because next year we're starting a kind of a hard waiver program for the undergraduates and graduate students. We've always had a hard waiver in place for the Academic Health Center students. At their request over 5 years ago, we implemented an enhanced student health benefit plan for Academic Health Center students who needed additional benefits. One of the conditions and ways we could accomplish that was to capture enrollment and institute a hard waiver. Through that process, we've kept the plan costs as low as possible, covering the benefits that the Academic Health Center required. Next year, we're in the process of implementing a hard waiver for the undergraduate and other graduate student population. So this is just coming up now because people are starting to apply for the waiver through their fall registration process for 2012.
And Mr. Anderson, could you explain what a hard waiver and what that? I saw lots of lots of faces going. So explain a hard waiver to us, please, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Previously, students would register and indicate what insurance
they had,
but it was on an
honor system or what's called a soft waiver. Students could submit any information, and we wouldn't catch them unless we uncovered the information in an audit. Hard waiver basically is a process of ensuring coverage by having students submit a certificate of coverage and just supplying some demonstration that they do indeed.
Chair, if I could also add from your other question, we have an extensive marketing campaign promotions that we've had Student Advisory Committee also review, that direct mailings go out, email notifications, posters on campus, and then it is part of the registration process itself online. So when a student is registering for classes, they will get the notification of the insurance requirement, the link to the website for waivers, and aren't able to even complete that registration without addressing those issues. So it is not possible for a student to not have access to that information, be aware of the program, the requirements, and their options to be able to waive out.
Representative Nornes.
Again, an additional comment. A little while ago, somebody made a reference to it would be irresponsible not to require insurance. I guess it just brings up a question in my mind. Are we suggesting that MNSCU is not responsible then because they do not require it?
Mr.
Madam Chair and Senator, that was the comment we had from the community providers. That I had is that, in essence, they're telling the university that it is irresponsible on our part to be bringing that many people into the community without that safety net of access, and they're left with the financial impact of that, of these unpaid bills, that then those students leave the community, and it's left to the hospitals and medical facilities to try and address. That's really was the impetus behind years ago when schools across the country started looking at this requirement to have for insurance when students come into the community.
Representative Banyan.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Happen to be the proud father of a child that's going to go to college next year for the first time. Where would she have gone? And I know her. She'll go kind of look around a little bit at the web. How does she find out about the waiver now? It sounds to me like it's pulled information. She has to go find it on a website to learn about the provision, or is there something mailed out?
Mr. Anderson?
Representative, no. Letters were sent out to all parents this year announcing the implementation of the hard waiver. We've also sent out emails, which is the official form of university communication to all incoming students. And we've, Mr. Schlopper indicated, we've had a pretty extensive marketing campaign reaching out to the coordinate campuses to announce the change in policy. And we believe we've reached the masses. I can't say that everybody has opened every email, but I believe we've reached the majority of students.
Madam Chair.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifiers. And I want to make sure I did understand correctly. Hard waiver means hard to waive, harder to waive than before. Did I understand that correctly?
Mr. Anderson.
No, representative and members of the committee, it just means proof of coverage. It's not harder to waive. Consider what we've done with the Academic Health Center for 5 years. Very few students are unable to waive based on the coverage levels that the Academic Health Center has set.
Madam Chair.
Representative Banyan.
And I'll defer to Senator Carlson, who has more experience in the industry than I would have. But the reason for the hard waiver is, at least in your comments, seemed to be to make sure, to ensure some increase in the size of the pool of insured. It seemed to me that you want to be sure that you had extended coverage to a broader pool of students.
Mr. Anderson.
Representative, members of the committee, with all due respect, really the plan was to ensure the students are covered, period. Under the old waiver process, we know that approximately 10% of students continue to go without any coverage at all. Our objective was to ensure coverage for everybody, not to ensure enrollment in our plan.
Representative
Thank you.
Madam Chair. Oh. Chair, yes, Representative Vogel, you have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering, what kind of dollars are we talking that that the community would be stuck with for insurance claims?
Mr. Anderson?
Representative, members of the committee, it's hard to estimate the impact at a facility level. We know that emergency room visits are $1,000 plus. We know that hospitalizations are $10,000 to $20,000. Those are the types of bad debt considerations that the Regents considered in 1975 when they implemented the institutional mandate. We know that we're talking tens of twenties of thousands of dollars at facility and medical practice level.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, but you don't have, do you have any numbers, statistics from uninsured students over the last 5 years, anything like that, where you could give us some numbers of what you're looking at?
Mr. Anderson?
Representative, members of the committee, we don't track that information for uninsured students. We know that some students continue to drop out from the university because of medical cost liabilities, but we have no information on those students who go uninsured and where and when they seek care and what kind of medical debt they incur.
One more follow-up.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So previously, my understanding, you didn't ask for proof that they had any kind of insurance. You were just taking them at their word. You didn't ask for a policy number or anything like that. Is that correct?
Mr. Anderson.
Representative, members of the committee, we asked for the information through the registration process. They submitted the information online. All of the information that that we would have needed to know was contained or captured in the registration information. From that information, if resources allowed, we could go out and we could screen that information and look for information that was either obviously wrong information or sometimes students would put information in that was blatantly, very obviously, not an insurance company or an insurance plan, and we would see that. But without the process we're putting in place for next fall, we didn't have the resources to look at every single registration file to verify insurance.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I believe.
Thank you.
There's
Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and I too am testifying about Section 1 because we're really concerned about the mental health of students. As you may know, this age group, college age, young adults, is actually where we are most likely to see the emergence of a serious mental illness. We have countless numbers of people who've come through our office, including legislators in this body, whose young adults went away to college and developed schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, serious depression, and really ran into many, many problems. And sometimes they run into problems because they're not able to access treatment, because they don't have good health insurance coverage, or because they're not covered at all. We believe that, early intervention is really extremely important so that we keep these young people on the trajectory into adulthood, into successful adulthood. We know that early intervention is especially important with illnesses such as schizophrenia. The more time someone has a psychotic episode, the further injury to the brain that happens. If we don't have coverage, what we know is there is a very large burden on our society. I think all you have to do is look at the number of people with a serious mental illness who are in jail, who are homeless, who drop out. Over 500 people die by suicide in Minnesota. We have people end up on our public programs, medical assistance, Social Security, and really end up costing us a whole lot. We know in talking to mental health providers that being underinsured is really a huge problem. Our school-linked mental health services are seeing that a lot of families who have large deductibles are not able to pay for the cost of the care. And, of course, they just can't pay for that when it gets up that high. Another thing is that I think to think about is that it used to be that this age group was the largest uninsured group. Minnesota had a law saying that you could stay on your family's coverage until age 25, but it didn't cover self-insured plans and it didn't cover state employees. The new federal law has actually helped so that we have more of those students covered. But again, we still have some students who are underinsured when it comes to mental health treatment. Mental health parity does not require that mental health treatment be covered, and I think that's a really important thing to remember. So you could have someone who's in a self-insured plan not have any mental health coverage at all. And again, because this age group is most likely to develop a mental illness, we do want to make sure that they're covered. Another thing I just wanted to mention is that, you know, last year when this legislature passed the Minnesota Healthy Contribution Plan, working with both Representative Gottwald and Senator Han, we required that the Healthy Contribution Plan had to have coverage for mental health and substance abuse. So your two leaders, in a sense of your Health and Human Services committees, understood that if we don't have our insurance covering mental health, that our society and our public programs end up paying for it one way or another. While I was waiting for the committee to start, I actually got an email from a mom whose 22-year-old son did not have insurance and now is facing a $40,000 bill from his three hospitalizations for untreated bipolar disorder. So you can rack up pretty large debt at a pretty young age, and they're, of course, now wondering, you know, what they can do. That in looking at this language that you would at least require that mental health and substance abuse be covered. Again, we know this is a huge problem. Our state advisory committee on mental health, this has come up in the Children's Advisory Committee about, frankly, community colleges and others not having, students not having access to mental health treatment on those campuses and not having good health insurance coverage. So again, I'd just like you to take into consideration the mental health needs of students in this age group. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Further discussion or anyone else from the audience who wanted to testify? I actually would like to propose a quick recess so that we can, so that the Senate conferees can just take a look. Since this is the House's proposal, we at least like that. I would ask if I would entertain a motion for a recess for 15 minutes. Representative Detmer moves a motion for a recess for 15 minutes, so we'd be back about, 10-2? On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. We are in recess. You guys
They provide for early intervention. They know they have trouble, but they also have tons of resources.
I don't think they would want to admit how many students have mental health.
But obviously, my job is to hold the House position in the middle. But I think that. Students have enough cover so that other students have coverage. So, and I think the NAMI thing is an important thing. Obviously, that goes to the issue of the scope of the coverage. I think even before you get there, there's the issue about who gets left holding the bag. Carlos gets really sick, and Bruce is classmate. So you then passes that on somewhere. They got to cover it somewhere.
I guess I had a clear answer as to. Come back to health facilities from that point of view. It's a
go after Congress in that case, and I'm sure then we'll leave the rest of the U-Haul. I don't know. And I imagine to the extent that you've already shelled out expenses, I don't know. I mean, new finances are kind of perplexing to me because it's a big institution. Department's gone. Does the Senate have this proposal?
I think theirs was.
They had like a cap.
Yeah, right? They had a 60.
That's what.
And I. And we didn't have a cap. No, 6,500.
So you're talking about engineering degrees?
Yeah, this was that engine.
It's a cap per year?
Academic year. It's a minimum of 4 years. Still, $6,000. That sounds pretty good.
We saw the cap like when Chad and my staff go over and ask for degrees. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
And he didn't seem to be concerned about it. Still doesn't answer my question about what does it cost. And I imagine they're probably putting together other financial aid, other scholarships.
It's just, that's just part of the whole. Too much. Have to burn.
Good guy. Remember serving with Burn. Oh, look at that. I was just sending you something. He said, el mero fan viene de un fondo distinto. So it comes from mining?
Mining? No, no, no viene. Estaba yo solo porque estaba viviendo a ver si es Germain. Mm-hmm. Pero no es bien. Tal vez al final hemos... No violó ninguna ley.
¿Es en qué?
No violó ninguna ley. ¿Estando aquí?
No tengo. So.
Okay. No quiero que vaya.
No tengo. El problema. Ok, aquí viene el. Aquí viene.
Esto es un tema que estaba buscando un vehículo, pero porque el único vehículo que puede, no, pero nosotros estamos en Promise. Sí, de radio. Está buscando un vehículo. Es, pero es muy difícil. Entonces, pero la clave. Lo que Tachi dice que I think it's
to see it.
Bueno, me va a decir, hay que ser bueno, pero me va a decir, se trata de esto, esto no está frente a nosotros.
Pull it in here, you know. Sorry there, Bob. Squeeze you. Oh, man. It's only... only Wednesday. It's only Wednesday.
Only Wednesday. I'm looking.
Ken.
Ken.
What's this one? I got
tomorrow's
date. Your clock is down.
So we figured it out. Un poco tarde.
Oh,
think, I really think that something like this, this should maybe.
Yeah, I don't know how to do this.
Oh, in the state.
I don't know how to do this. De otra manera, hay cambios. Up to me,
I want you to know, because you guys went late, I had to miss the baseball game tonight. Well, we're not. We were down
here. No, we were here at 4:30.
I bet you were.
It's good.
Beautiful.
Este, creo que el señor que estaba ahí al lado. Yeah. Bernie's with you, right?
No, he's with Minsky.
He is with Minsky. Okay,
yeah,
he's with Minsky. Okay.
Just it. Called green. So then the speaker saw that and says, okay. Further, I thought sure there would have been.
No, es por todos, pero eso es solamente el asunto de healthcare.
They're not here.
We've had some time to talk with the conferees, and Representative Nornes has the DE-1-2. He renews that motion. Are there any questions or discussion regarding the DE-1-2? We did take testimony. Seeing none, Representative Nornes renews his motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. This was a delete all.
Right. Yes.
So now we will. This was a delete all. So we will vote on Senate File 1573 as amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. There's no other questions or comments. I thank you all very much, and I guess next time we'll see it on the floor. So thank you guys all very much. Thank you, Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We are adjourned.
I didn't see it.